I saw some sad news in the, and actually received a press release about this. I believe it was on Friday from Michigan State University. Tim Stout is the director for sports for WILX TV 10. You can also read his column. It's must reading in Sunday's sports section. Tim not only was the next door neighbor, but a friend and someone who really knew Tim Littwilder, who passed away, and Tim wrote about him. Tim, good morning.
Morning. Morning, Tony.
Well, it's always sad talking about someone who passes away, but as you wrote in your column, and as I've heard you talk about on the radio before, what a pretty cool guy who led a pretty good life, and he led an innovative life also.
Well, we should all, be able to live till 95, right? And he was active quite a bit in his final years. It's hard for me to believe it's been 29 years since he was the coach at Michigan State, and yet he was here for 19 years. And he's a rarity because I don't think anymore you would ever see a baseball coach from a prominent Southern school ever leave to come to the Big Ten. If it's ever going to happen, it would be the other way around, because that's where, the future basically, and where the expertise and the excellence in college baseball is in the Sun Belt. And he was a star coach at Florida State, but Biggie Munn talked him into coming here to replace John Cobes.
How do you do that, Tim?
I just think that at the time, Southern baseball was good, but not as dominant. The pay wasn't quite what it was here. I know Biggie paid him a little bit more than what they might normally pay. He wanted to pick baseball up again because he thought it was a sport that had popularity in the spring. John Cobes had been here for I don't know how many decades. I'd have to go back and look it up as the baseball coach. And Danny was an innovative guy, and, to Biggie's credit, he had quite a view. Here's a guy that came here for 19 years. The Big Ten was starting to get a little better at baseball, and he won two titles in 19 years, but he got him into the NCAA tournament in 1979, and Michigan State actually hosted a couple of NCAA tournament games, because I well remember in 79 the red bunting that they had out on the outfield, and the players were out the morning of the games and getting it adorned on the outfield fences out there. But what he'll always, he's a very decent major league player, played 11 years, and he played the 1942 All-Star game, was up one time and got a hit. And but he'll, go down as someone who affected the game long-term, because he saw a state police trooper stopping cars with a radar gun and asked if he could use the thing to see if he could measure the speed of baseball pitches. And from there, he kind of worked with another company to come up with a Judge pitching gun. And then he also invented this diamond dirt, which everybody uses at every level of baseball to kind of get muddy conditions dried up quicker than sand. And he had a couple of, he had a mirror. He would saw off bats to use for bunting practice. He had a convex mirror that he used for players to check their batting stroke and all that. He was a very innovative guy when it came to training. And as I say, that diamond dirt and the Judge radar guns, heck, those are staples in baseball today.
I hope he got patents on those things.
I don't know what his deal was and how that worked out with him. Danny lived across the street from me for 5 years in the 1970s. He and his wife, Pat. I think, if I remember correctly, his first wife had passed away. Because this is taxing my memory a bit. Once he left the area and went back to Florida, back to Clearwater, he would come up here once a year. And, if you saw him, you saw him, and if you didn't, you didn't. And he had his number retired here a few years ago as number one. There were three guys who wore number one at Michigan State who had the number one retired. He was among that group. But, to coach 19 years, you got to 66 years old, decided it was time to retire. And, the program, like a lot of them, was a little bit mundane at the time, and so he left then. But, his 488 wins are still the most in Michigan State baseball coaches history, and yet they have not had that many baseball coaches here because a couple of them were here for a very long time, especially John Cobes. That's why it's named Cobes Field.
Tim, you always talk about, I can remember over the years saying you could be innovative and you can know the X's and O's, but you got to have players, and he had a couple good ones, didn't he?
Well, what people will never frankly, is that it hadn't been for Danny Littwiler, Kirk Gibson never would have been in the major leagues and never would have hit those home runs that you see replayed all the time in the two World Series for the Dodgers and the Tigers, because Danny had a great relationship with Duffy Doherty, and you had football players who were allowed to go play other sports in the spring. You don't see that very much anymore. So he had a couple of the football players playing baseball, and Gibson was one of them. But Gibson had a very hard time adjusting, and Gibson would get frustrated. He thought he got frustrated in the major leagues at Michigan State. I mean, he was ready to quit several times, and Danny kept talking him out of it. So he stayed, and, of course, by the time he finished his career, the major league scouts looked at him to the extent where, you know, he finally ended up getting signed to play baseball when a lot of us wondered how good he might have been as a football player. And then Brad Van Pelt, he couldn't talk, but Brad was a great baseball pitcher at Owosso High School, but he already played football and basketball here at, you know, going to three sports like that was so demanding on time. Danny always felt if he would have been able to work with Van Pelt to become a very good major league pitcher. So,
and he had Steve Garvey too, right?
Well, he had Steve Garvey, and, you know, Garvey came here as a football player with great baseball talent, but part of the deal when he came here from Tampa in 68 was he could play both sports, and he immediately drew the attention of all the Major League scouts. He was a defensive back for a year and started for Duffy his sophomore year, but after his sophomore year in baseball, the Dodgers made him too good a deal, and he ended up leaving. But, yeah, he was around Danny, and the two of them were close for years and years.
All right, Tim, just a couple more quick questions for you. I know you're preparing for your show. Just wanted to get your take on the realignment of these football conferences in the Division I of NCAA. It seemed like things calmed down a bit last week, but I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, what's amazing to me, Tony, is that the NCAA drags its feet on virtually everything. I mean, absolutely everything the NCAA does takes seemingly forever, whether it's an investigation or any kind of reform. But it's amazing to me how in these conference realignment stories, these guys make decisions in basically 48 hours, whether they're a go or a no-go. It stands to reason that if Texas A&M has now been formally admitted to the Southeastern Conference, that they're going to get at least one more to balance it at 14. Who that's going to be, I don't think it's going to be Missouri. Missouri talked the talk, but I think Missouri is among the schools that want to try to salvage the Big 8 or Big 12 or whatever you want to call it. I guess they got nine of them in there now. They'd like to salvage that because it just is so much less clutter if they can do that. I agree with Lloyd Carr, who I was with this last week. He wants to know how all these athletes are going to travel, as he says, safely, conveniently, without stress on their lives, because and he doesn't think fans are going to be able to be a part of these football games nearly as much with all the geographics that go into the travel. And for that reason, I'm not sure this is all going to slow down from here on out. The Big East may realign a little bit more in football and basketball because those are two separate entities. In other words, if you're in one sport, you're not necessarily in the other of any prominence, so they're going to divide that up. That's why Notre Dame is to some degree. But I think this is all going to slow down at least for a while now.
Well, Tim, you know, money is talked about, but if a kid is from Texas and his team is playing in the Pac-10, how are you going to get people to travel to these away games or come to the games when you have them at home?
Precisely Lloyd Carr's point last week, which is, I say, it's amazing to me that these presidents who've made these decisions for some of these schools have made them that quickly when there's so many things I would think that you would have to look into. Because it's when they say, well, this is all about football, well, that's fine, but all these programs have 20 to 30 other sports that they're going to have to play, and how are they going to do all that? And I'm sure none of them have figured all that out yet. I mean, Texas A&M alone, if you go into the Southeastern Conference, how's their softball team going to get to Florida or any of the other SEC schools, you know, with any kind of relative convenience that does not detract from their schoolwork, let alone the economics of doing that something in sports that don't have all that much money to spend to begin with. So, you know, I'm not sure this is all going to, you know, be a wild scramble in the end beyond what it already is. The Big Ten has been uniquely quiet on this. I think they're going to sit back, see how this works with the 12 of them and go from there, because I don't think there are any other schools other than Notre Dame, which they know they can't get, that are out there that they would be willing to say, well, let's go from 12 to 14. The only thing I see is that in the near future, the SEC with 13 is going to want to take one more and make it 14 so they can balance their division.
Can Michigan State beat Ohio State in Columbus this Saturday?
I think they can. I think Michigan State's defense is overrated at the moment because it hasn't played any good teams yet that it beat. But Ohio State, to me, has the most vulnerable team it's had in years. Offensively, it has a tremendous struggle throwing the ball with a freshman quarterback. If Michigan State plays well, it's my sense they have a terrific chance to win the game. Now, having said that, they're stepping up in class, too. I think this is a game that's going to come down to the two quarterbacks, which one plays the best. Michigan State's got a fifth-year starter, although he has not played in this kind of a situation and done as well. Okay, struggle against Iowa, struggle against Alabama, struggle against Notre Dame. So you get him out of town against a tougher team, and it hasn't been quite as successful. But in Ohio State's going to be very difficult defensively to move the ball on. But I don't know about Ohio State's offense. I just think they're going to have a very difficult time through the course of the day, and it's going to come down to which quarterback can make the most plays in a limited game.
All right, Tim, as we let you go, are the Detroit Lions for real at 3-0?
Absolutely. I don't think there's anybody else. You know, the Packers are one of four teams with the Lions that are undefeated yet, but there's a long way to go. But that win yesterday to me is one that when you get down to the latter part of the season, that's the difference between a playoff team that makes it and one that gets knocked out. And that win yesterday to me is terrific for them.
All right.
They got to stay healthy, though.
All right, thanks so much. You can watch Tim on WILX TV 10 as well as Fox 47. You can always read his column in the Sunday Atlantic State Journal. Thanks so much, Tim.